Thank you, Andy, so much for coming down. It's really wonderful to have you here in person.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks
and
for having me.
And I just found out we actually lived in the same dorm in college, just a few years apart. So it's been almost a year since you took over from Jeff as CEO of Amazon, and it's been a year of firsts, the first stock split since the dot-com boom, the first vote to unionize an Amazon warehouse, your first Bloomberg Technology Conference. Thank you. I want to start with a quick report card.
I'm Emily Chang, and welcome to this edition of the Bloomberg Studio 1.0 podcast. In February 2021, Jeff Bezos shocked the world by announcing plans to step down as Amazon CEO. A few months later, he passed the reins to Andy Jassy, his longtime top lieutenant, the architect of one of the company's biggest profit engines, Amazon Web Services. Bezos has stayed on as executive chair, leaving Jassy to navigate a critical inflection point in Amazon's history. How does the company manage market turmoil, rising inflation, and regulatory scrutiny, and a push by some warehouse workers to unionize, all while keeping customers coming back? Joining me on this edition of Bloomberg Studio 1.0, Amazon's second CEO, Andy Jassy. He joined us from our flagship Bloomberg Technology Summit in San Francisco.
I'd like you to grade your view of Amazon's performance, and we've got time later to really dig in. But quickly, how would you grade Amazon's performance over the last year with customers?
Well, I think I'm not sure I'm the right person to grade myself during the year or not, but I'll give you my take. I think with respect to customers, I think we've done a lot of good, and I think if you look at during the pandemic, which really has extended till the early part of this year, so much of the PPE and food and essential items and people equipping their home offices were bought from Amazon and to scale the way we needed to. Remember, in 2020, we grew 39% year over year on a $245 billion revenue run rate. I mean, it's unprecedented. It's never happened before. But it was really hard to do that. And we had to take the really big footprint, a fulfillment center footprint, we built the first 25 years of Amazon and doubled it in 24 months. And we built a transportation network, which we planned on doing over several years, but because we weren't going to be able to get enough capacity at the cost structure we needed to serve all the big demand in 20 and 21, we built out that transportation network in just a couple of years. We nearly doubled the size of our workforce during that time, and we still didn't have enough people to receive all the items in our fulfillment centers and to ship them. And so we had to make decisions. We looked at, we didn't have enough people to receive them in the right spots to get them to customers as cost-effectively as we normally did. And so we decided, do we just allow ourselves to be out of stock with much longer delivery times, or do we stock them wherever we can, even if it meant we're going to have to pay for a lot more transportation costs to get it there? And in all of those cases, we sided on the side of customers. And I think customers really appreciated it. And I think you saw it in other businesses. AWS is a really big part of helping companies and governments have business continuity during the pandemic, and so many companies and organizations in the last year made the strategic decision that they were going to stop running their own infrastructure technology and disproportionately chose AWS to help them move to the cloud, and we've spent a lot of time helping them make that transformation. So I think we've done a lot of good for customers, and we have always sided on the side of customers.
So what about investors? I mean, the stock is down significantly from a peak last year. Yeah. Obviously, there's broader market turmoil.
Yeah, I think, for investors or financially, I'd say it's mixed. I think we have some businesses that are growing really strongly. If you look at AWS, in 2021 grew 37% year over year. It's on a $74 billion revenue run rate business, which is pretty unusual growth. And we grew 58% year over year in our advertising business, which is a $32 billion revenue run rate business. So some businesses growing really strongly. And we've continued to grow in our retail business despite pretty crazy comparables during 2020. But I think the real challenge for us there is on the cost side. And there have been several things that have happened, some of which are more controllable than others. I think the part that's less controllable is really around inflation. And I think we thought that inflation would start to attenuate in 2022. And with the war in Ukraine, it just went the other way and has significantly accelerated. And so the cost of trucking and line haul and ocean and air and fuel has just substantially gone up. And I think that will attenuate at some point. No one knows how long that'll take. I think the more controllable areas for us are really around fulfillment center capacity and productivity. And I think on the fulfillment center capacity side, it was taking about 24 months to build new fulfillment centers during the pandemic. And so we had to make decisions, you know, in mid-2020 and early 2021 on how much demand we were going to plan for. And the team made a decision, which I think in retrospect was a good decision, that we were going to build to the high side of what we could imagine consumer demand being, because we didn't want to constrain consumers or sellers who were trying to place inventory in our fulfillment centers for fulfillment by Amazon. And so, you know, we end up with more capacity than we need right now. And there's a number of things that we're working on. We've stopped building on properties where we don't need it yet, and we've let a number of leases lapse, and not a small number, you know, of both those things. But, you know, we are very confident that we're going to grow into that cost structure on the fulfillment center side. And we decided that if we were going to have to err one way, we'd err on the side of customers, even if it meant short-term trouble for us or challenges for us. You know, I think on the productivity side, what I would say is that when you build as quickly as we did in the fulfillment center space and the transportation network, you're always going to have areas that you can optimize and be more streamlined in. And that's true for us. And we've had a lot of occasions in our history where we've worked on productivity and made improvements. And we have a lot of clearly defined initiatives. And I'm confident we're going to get back to the right level of profitability.
You are going to sublease 30 million square feet of space. Is there a mistake in the execution there because of the overbuilding?
Again, because you have to make these decisions 2 years in advance. And again, if you put yourself back in 2020, where we were growing 39% year over year on a $245 billion revenue run rate, it's very hard to know what's the right amount to build, and you have to make a decision. And we made the decision to err on the side of our consumers and sellers. And we knew it might mean that we might have more capacity for some short period of time, but we were willing to do that because we're always long-term oriented and customer-focused.
Now, how would you grade Amazon's performance with employees, your colleagues? There has been some high profile.
Yeah, I think that when I started in this gig, we had just created a new leadership principle to strive to be Earth's best employer. And I think we've spent a lot of time trying to think through what that really means. It's broad. And I think we've made a fair bit of progress, but it's still early, in my opinion. I think Amazon in general is a unusually compelling place to work. You know, when you have a mission, which is to make customers' lives better and easier every day and relentlessly invent to do so, it's inspiring. And if you layer on top of that, that we not only make customers' lives better, but people get to work on a scale that's nearly unprecedented given the nature of Amazon's business, with a culture that likes to invent and is willing to move fast on its ideas and willing to be long-term oriented, which means if you want to leave a mark on the world that outlasts you, you have a chance to do so. That combination is really unusual, and I think it's why we rank high in a lot of the polls on great places to work. But I still think there are many areas that we can keep improving. You know, and I think, the first one I'd mention is safety. You know, I think that in our fulfillment centers, that is the top priority. And, you know, when you get into the details and the numbers and outside of all the spin of it all, you know, we're about average there, but we're not trying to be average. You know, we want to be the best in the industry and the best in the world at it. And that's a high priority and an area that I'm passionate about and the team is passionate about. I think we've made a lot of progress in over the last several years, including last year, on diversity and inclusion. But to really get to where we want to get to, I think we have a lot of work to still do there. We have a very strong set of managers in Amazon, but we have grown so much in the last 10 years, and we have so many new managers, many of whom we have promoted internally. And we have management training programs, but I think you've got to kind of retool those things to really make sure that you have managers who are developing your teammates the way you want. Managing is a privilege. And so, you know, we've spent a lot of time in the last number of months refining our management training programs that you'll see us rolling out. You know, and then I also think that our services and tools to our external-facing customers have outpaced those for our internal employees. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a lot of work we can do to make our employees' everyday lives easier. And we've identified kind of a top 100 list of of areas that we can be better at that we are just metronomically stepping through. And so we've made a lot of progress, but we have a lot of work to do still.
Dave Clark just announced fairly abruptly that he's leaving Amazon after 23 years. He has been described as an absolutely integral member of the S team, knew the logistics and fulfillment center network better than anyone. Just announced he's going to be co-CEO of Flexport. What happened with Dave specifically, and were you surprised?
Well, you know, I think different people want to do different jobs with different responsibilities at different times, and it's incredibly personal. And I think Dave wanted a different gig at this point, and I don't begrudge him at all. I mean, Dave has added so much to Amazon over the last 23 years, and particularly over the last 2.5 years, which have been among the most crazy in the history of Amazon. And I think that if you want to build a business that lasts 100 plus years and that lasts all of us, you have to get used to these sort of transitions and make sure that you're doing the right succession planning and you've got the right talent to keep building the business. And we've done that historically, and I expect we'll do it again.
Elon Musk just came out saying he has a super bad feeling about the economy. Tesla laying off 10% of his staff. Jamie Dimon says he's preparing for an economic hurricane. The World Bank just slashed its forecast for global growth. How do you feel about the economic climate?
Well, I wasn't planning on giving any guidance today.
Please.
But
Super bad?
I think there's some things as it relates to Amazon that are useful to remember. You know, I think the first piece is, remember that 85% of the worldwide retail market segment share is offline. And if you believe that equation is going to flip at some point, which we do, I think it will flip over a long period of time, but if you believe that, you know, the companies that have great customer experiences like we do, I think are going to do all right. And you know, and great customer experiences mean you have really broad selection, low prices, and very fast delivery that's reliable to customers. You know, I also think that if you look at different downturns, you know, should we have one at some point? And we've been through a few, obviously, in the 25 years that I've been at Amazon. Customers change their habits. You know, they tend to be pickier about what they buy and when they buy and who they buy from. And they often pick the partners and the companies that they trust, you know, and that have great customer experiences, like the dimensions I mentioned earlier. I also think there's, you know, those two reasons, those two factors give me some optimism that even if we have a downturn, that we have the potential to still grow. I would say that regardless, though, we have so many things that we believe we can do better for customers. We have a roadmap that's, you know, probably 3 to 5 years long, and we're going to continue to invent, we're going to continue to be insurgent, and we have a lot of work to do to get to where we think we ultimately can get for customers.
Now, when it comes to the stock, as I mentioned, it has fallen significantly. Do you think investors are missing something, or has tech just been overvalued? And this also, of course, matters to employees who are significantly paid in stock.
Well, you know, I haven't been at Amazon for 25 years. I arrived at the company 3 weeks before we went public. I have never tried to predict what the stock's going to do. And any time I've tried to a little bit, I've been wrong. So, you know, I think it's pretty hard to predict what it's going to be in any short period of time. I do really believe that Benjamin Graham maxim that in the short term the stock market tends to be a voting machine, and in the long term it tends to be a weighing machine. And I think if you know we've been through a lot of points in 25 years of being at Amazon where the macro factors are off and stocks are down, our stock is down, but you can't really control that. You know, we have a concept we talk about a lot at Amazon, inputs and outputs. You know, and the ultimate output for a company is share price, you know, and then other big outputs are free cash flow or profit or revenue. You can't really manage the outputs. You have to manage at the input level, and that's where we spend all our time. And so in these types of circumstances, you have to focus on what customers care about and building for them in the long term and inventing on their behalf. You got to get your cost structure in the right spot, But if you do the right things for the business long term, things tend to work out. I think we've had very good returns for investors, and I expect that to be true again. I have, as you could probably tell, a lot of optimism for, and I'm an optimistic person, but I also, you know, there's this Foo Fighters song called Congregation that has that line, you need blind faith, but no false hope, you know, so I do have blind faith, but I also think I don't have false hope. You know, I have a lot of data, and I think insights internally, where all of our businesses are on the right path. But if you measure at any one point with lots of things happening around you, you may not get to the same conclusion that you get to long term.
What are the moonshots at Amazon that are capturing most of your time and attention? What is going to define the next era of Amazon? I mean, is it Astro the home robot, or is it something else?
Well, you know, we have a unique way that we look at big new investments. And I'm not sure it's right or wrong. It just happens to be our way. And we ask ourselves, when we're considering something, four questions. We ask, if it's successful, can it be big and move the needle at Amazon? Is it being well served today? Do we have a differentiated approach? And do we have competence there? And if not, can we acquire quickly? And if we like the answer to those questions, we'll go pursue it with a single-threaded team that isn't distracted by the rest of the business. And sometimes that leads to innovation and investments that seem pretty obvious. Like, you know, when I got to that company, it was a books-only retailer, and then we expanded to music and video and electronics and toys. It seemed obvious to people. Other times, that process does not lead to investments that seem obvious to people. I mean, AWS was something that people externally and internally thought was a little bit nutty at the time. But just imagine what Amazon would be today without AWS. And I think that you see the same thing here. You know, there are so many significant investments we're making that I'm excited about. I'm going to have to constrain myself to a few. But, you know, I'm really excited about what we're doing in the Prime Video space. Mm-hmm. I think we're clearly on the right track there and building a significant business.
That's interesting because Netflix also just announced some layoffs, first subscriber loss in a decade, Disney cutting back on costs. Do you see Amazon's strategy as fundamentally different from Netflix and Disney? And if so, how?
Well, you know, we're very bullish on it. And remember, we, you know, all of the models are a little bit different. But for Prime Video, we have 200 million plus Prime subscribers who are, you know, get that entertainment for free by being part of Prime. And so we have a little bit different pricing model than some of the others, but I'm incredibly encouraged by what we have coming. If you look at, I mean, we launched this show Reacher earlier in the year. It was a huge hit. We had the new Maisel season. We just launched the new Boys season, which is
are you a big
start.
Boys fan?
I am a big Boys
Amazon
fan.
Is Amazon Vought?
It's very good. Of course, we have Lord of the Rings coming up, you know, in September and Thursday Night Football. So I'm very bullish about it. We also, you know, we're excited about what we've done with MGM. You know, I think some of the assets there will go very well with the rest of what we're doing entertainment-wise. We have an ad-supported channel there or platform there in Freevee, which I think is appealing. And we have a channels business, which is also a little bit different, where third-party streaming companies will ingest all their content in channels so they get kind of the leading viewing experience that we've built over a number of years. And then they get to sell monthly subscriptions as a channel to our 200 million plus Prime subscribers. And so if you look at Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount and Starz and Global, they're building really significant subscription businesses. So I'm very bullish about that business. I'm optimistic that we have a chance to build a significant grocery business, which is, you know, early stages for us. I am excited about Kuiper, which is our low Earth orbit satellite that we're building. You got to remember there are 300 to 400 million people in the world who have limited to no internet connectivity. I mean, just think about how different the world is when you don't have that type of connectivity. And so I think that's a really significant opportunity that has some AWS characteristics to it. I continue to be very optimistic about Alexa, you know, building the world's best personal assistant. We have 200 million endpoints already that are using Alexa. We're clearly onto something there. And then, you know, our autonomous driving, ride-hailing service in Zoox that we're building, you know, here in the Bay Area. I just think with the way auto consumption is evolving, I think that also is a chance to be a really significant business. Now, I don't know if all of them are going to be successful, But if any one of them becomes the fourth pillar for us on top of Marketplace and Prime and AWS, we're a completely different company, just like we were when AWS became successful. So I think they're very worthwhile investments and bets, and I'm optimistic about them.
You didn't mention Astro, obviously, though, powered by Alexa.
You mentioned Astro, yeah.
But, I mean, are home robots going to be zooming there? I don't yet.
Okay.
Where is it?
Giddy up.
It's not really widely available for sale. What's the status?
I'll help you get one.
Okay. Thank you. Everyone's very curious about Jeff's role these days, what kind of executive chair he really is. He said when he left that he'd focus his attention and energies on initiatives that he really cares about at Amazon, but from the outside, it looks like he's really focusing on philanthropy, he's focusing on space. What kind of an executive chairman is he?
Well, Jeff is always gonna be involved, and he has, I feel very lucky to have been at Amazon for 25 years. I feel very lucky to have worked directly for Jeff for 20 of them. And we have a really close relationship and have for a long time, and I think we share a lot of the same values about customers and how important it is to optimize for customers and how high standards they need to be, given how easy it is for people to switch and the importance of invention and speed. And so, I just feel very lucky to have had the chance to work so closely with him. We still talk all the time. It's very useful for me to be able to seek his counsel. He did the job for so long, and he's always made himself available.
So is your relationship, he was your only boss for 25 years, right?
20.
Is your relationship fundamentally different than it was when you were the head of AWS?
Yeah, of course. Every single job you have, the relationship's different. Remember, the first couple years I worked for Jeff, I worked as what we call his shadow then, which is really like a chief of staff. And that was different than when I was starting AWS, which was different from when we got AWS going. And it was, a business that was starting to do well. And it's different when I'm in the CEO role. But, the constant has always been that we have a great relationship and we collaborate really well. And I think that we listen to one another. Again, for me, to have the ability to bounce different things off of him and seek his counsel is very valuable.
And he's still focused on Amazon?
Yeah, he still is focused on Amazon, yeah.
Amazon is poised to become the biggest private sector employer in the world, second only. Right now, Walmart is in that spot, but Amazon will probably soon surpass it. First vote to unionize at an Amazon warehouse. I know you've been spending a lot of time at warehouses. When you look at someone like Chris Smalls, who I think some people look at as this modern-day hero who got fired, pulled off this union vote, what's your message to someone like him? Your message to the folks who think, maybe we should join a union?
Well, I think that the first thing to be clear about is that employees get to make that choice, whether they want to have a union or not. They always have had that choice, and it continues to be their choice. And we happen to think they're better off without a union for a number of reasons, including the fact that, it's much harder when you have a union to have a direct relationship with your manager and to get things done quickly. So if you see something on the line that you think could be better for your team or you or your customers, you can't just go to your manager and say, let's change this. There's a whole process in bureaucracy that you have to go through to be able to do that. And we get, when there's a union, we're going to get the feedback filtered by what the union decides is worth bringing up. And we'd much rather hear from every employee whatever is on their mind. And so, I think if you want to continue to have the structure that we've had for all this time, you have to have really competitive benefits. And then I think if you look at Amazon's, they're very unusual in this space. We championed the $15 minimum wage several years ago. The starting salary is now over $18 an hour, which is more than double the federal minimum wage. You get full health insurance and 401k and 20 weeks, up to 20 weeks of parental leave. And if you want to get a college education, you haven't had one, we have a career choice program that lets our fulfillment center associates be able to do so. That is a very unusual and compelling set of benefits, and those were all accomplished without a union. So, I think that we realize that we have to continue to work on the relationship with our employees, and we need to continue to provide the right benefits, and we need to continue to work on safety, and that's our intention.
The FTC has revamped its antitrust inquiry into Amazon, and by some accounts is accelerating it. Are you preparing for an antitrust lawsuit from the FTC?
I think that if you are a large company that's growing to a significant extent like we have, you have to be prepared to be scrutinized. And we have known this for some time, you know, many years. And we have tried to run the company with that in mind and knowing that if somebody looked, that we would stand up to that scrutiny. And I think that's what we've tried to do in running the business. We can't control what, whether organizations bring different suits against us. But I think if you look at our business, if you actually look at the fact, if you take out of, take out of the equation that there may not be the most objective, leadership when it comes to Amazon in that organization. If you look at the facts, in our retail business, we're about 1% of the worldwide retail market segment share. And remember, 85% of it is still offline. And if you look in our AWS business, we, about, depending on how you measure it, 95% of the worldwide global IT spend is on premises. And then we have a cloud business, and then we have a portion of that. We have a leading market segment share in the cloud part of this, but we operate, who we compete with in AWS is really on-premises IT in addition to the cloud. So, these are relatively small percentages of the entire pie, and you can kind of step through all the businesses. And I think simply because you've been successful in a few different businesses doesn't somehow mean that you have unnatural market power. It just means you've been successful in a couple different customer experiences, but we still have a relatively small amount of market segment share in those areas.
What about the SEC? You're being sued by them over third-party data and how you've used it. Do you think in the past Amazon made mistakes with letting employees internally see how those third-party sellers were doing?
We have pretty good control. I mean, we of course disagree with the premise of that, but I would say that we have very good controls with respect to the data that that different employee sets are able to see. And I think if you look at sellers, we have about 2 million small and medium-sized sellers who sell in our marketplace. And by the way, I think that we can be better for sellers. I think that we can have better tools for them to get started. We can have better tools for them to manage what they're doing across their different Amazon units. I think we can communicate better. There's a whole bunch of things we can do better. And we agonize over every single email or communication we get from sellers that's, critical or where they're unhappy. But we also, we get many thousands of very positive emails from sellers, and we do very regularly robust surveying, and a lot more sellers are happy with Amazon than unhappy with Amazon. And I think if you look at what they're able to do is, as a business, by virtue of selling on Amazon versus not, it completely changes what's possible. Sellers don't really long for e-commerce software. That exists in lots of places, and it's not very expensive. What they love about selling on Amazon is that they get access to our hundreds of millions of customers, and that completely changes what their prospects can be in terms of the businesses they're building. So we have a lot of work to do there, like we do in a lot of other places, but I think we have a very strong partnership with sellers.
What's the view of the supply chain right now, and how much pain there is going to continue to be, and for how long?
Well, I think that there's a lot of challenges in the supply chain still. I mean, it's gotten better than it was, but there are all sorts of challenges. Non-perishable goods, electronics, chips is still a really, a significant issue for all sorts of businesses. And so, I think most companies are working really hard to overcome those challenges. In our case, we have tried to order significantly ahead of when we normally do, which again might create risks financially, but we're going to do it to side on the side of customers. We have worked really hard to open a lot more points of presence and ports and to increase our capacity in getting products in. But I think it's going to be something that companies battle with for some time.
What's some time? 6 months? A year?
I don't know.
2 years?
I don't know the answer to that. But I don't think it's imminently going away. I think if you look at some of the challenges that we have around capacity, that inflation worsens, I don't think it's, around the corner.
You made a huge mark on Amazon with AWS, obviously. What is the mark that you want to make still on Amazon? I mean, in this new role, what's going to define the Andy Jassy era?
Well, I don't really think of it that way, Emily. I mean, I don't think it's really about an Andy Jassy era or any one person, you know. And by the way, AWS was not about any one person. That, you know, if you've spent any time on AWS, that is an unbelievable team, not just an incredible leadership team, which it is, but just top to bottom, the number of inventors and people who care about customers and operate, you know, something where it has to work almost like a dial tone. It's always teams. And so what I'm hoping for over the next number of years is really what really unites all the parts of our business, which is we exist to make customers' lives better every day and easier every day. And we're going to keep inventing to do so. And so I look at every single one of our businesses and, you know, take our retail business or our consumer business, which is the oldest of our businesses, 85% of it still lives offline. Like, I think we have a lot of upside and a lot of growth. And I think as much invention as we've seen the last 25 years, you know, the time I've been there, I think it's going to look small compared to the next 25 years. There is a lot for us to invent on behalf of customers. And so, you know, I'm excited to be part of the team that makes that happen. And, you know, I also think that there's a lot we can do as we continue to make Amazon a place that employees love working at, and it's the place that they can best build their career at. And I also think that you've seen some of this last few years, but increasingly, you know, we are continuing to, you know, to increase the amount that we give back to the communities in which we have a big presence, and that really matters to me. I think we have a responsibility to do that. And so, you know, it's a long journey, you know, that we're working on, but I'm excited to be part of it, and you know, I hope to be part of it for a long time.
Well, thank you for joining us and telling us about the way the journey is going so far.
Thank you,
Andy Jassy, CEO of Amazon.
Bloomberg Studio 1.0 is produced and edited by Lauren Ellis and Brian Cardigainer. I'm Emily Chang, your host and executive producer. Thanks for listening.